British Sky Broadcasting, Paramount Classics and Seven Arts present a Samson Films production in association with Mace Neufeldt Productions, Asylum. Directed by David McKenzie. Starring Natasha Richardson as Stella Raphael, Ian McKellen as Peter Cleave, Martin Shokas as Edgar Stark, Hugh Bonneville as Max Raphael, and Joss Ackland as Jack Straffen. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. A doctor takes up a new position at a mental hospital in 1950s England. His unhappy wife falls for one of the inmates with disastrous consequences. Nighttime, a white Jaguar car pulls up outside a large floodlit building. A barrier lifts. The car stops. A security man shines a torch into the car on Max and Stella Raphael and their son Charlie in the back. Stella turns and smiles at him. Huge green gates open. The Jag drives through towards a large building with a clock tower. The Jag drives past several buildings in the grounds of the hospital and goes down a sloping drive. The car parks outside a large Victorian house. Watching from a window, a middle-aged man with short hair and a smart suit, Peter Cleave. He turns and walks down a dark corridor. Max switches on the hall light of the house. Charlie carries a suitcase. Stella holds his hand. Max picks up a bag and leads Charlie upstairs. Stella puts down her vanity case at the foot of the stairs and wanders through the dark sitting room. She switches on the light and walks into the empty kitchen, turning on another light. She looks around and walks over to the fridge. She opens it. It's empty, but for a bottle of champagne with a label tied to the neck. Carrying a glass of champagne, wearing a white shift and pearls, Stella wanders through the dark garden. She takes a sip of her drink. Her blonde hair is pinned up. She walks towards a ramshackle glasshouse. There is a bench inside. Most of the windows are broken. She carefully walks in across a door which is lying on the floor. She puts a cigarette in her mouth and lights it. Someone approaches, shining a torch at her. She turns to face them. It's her husband, Max, who looks around.
We should get this repaired.
He shines the torch on her impassive face. She stares at him.
I'm going to bed. Good night.
I'll be up soon.
Now it gives me great pleasure to welcome our new Deputy Superintendent, Dr. Max Raphael. We also welcome his wife Stella and their fine young fella Charlie. We wish you many contented years here among the confined and confused. I refer, of course, to the present company, not to the patients.
Hospital boss Jack Straffen walks over to Max.
Very kind.
That's okay.
Peter Cleave approaches Jack.
I do have
it. Please forgive the late comer. Rather delicate moment with our new mattress. Did I miss anything?
Only Jack's speech. Perfect timing.
Peter. I'd like to introduce you to Mrs. Raphael.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm so sorry. Peter Cleave. How do you do?
Stella Raphael.
Peter is our longest-serving doctor here.
I'm fixtures and fittings.
Forgive me. I need that sausage. Excuse me.
What's your field, Dr. Cleave?
Oh, Peter, please.
He shows her to a seat.
I tend to deal with the extreme cases. My particular interest is sexual pathology and its associated catastrophes.
What does your wife make of that?
She doesn't. I'm not. I spend my life immersed in the passions of others. Dangerous sport, love. Not sure I have the stomach for it.
I've been married for 12 years. I'm not sure I've ever thought of it as a sport.
Oh, well, marriage is a different beast entirely. I'm talking about passion.
What did Cleve have to say for himself?
Isn't that? I rather liked him.
Trust me, he's got fangs.
Who has?
Count Dracula.
He wanted my job, thought he deserved it for his years of loyalty. Why didn't you speak to any of the other wives?
There wasn't time. But I'm so looking forward to our coffee mornings.
You will involve yourself in the life of the hospital. It's expected.
Of course.
Now, the band, I thought last year's was splendid, agreed?
Absolutely. Yes, but can we have some slower numbers this time? I've only just recovered. It was exhausting.
Rebook the band subject to slips. Show of hands. Carried. Next, do I have any takers for the cake? Stella, would you like to commandeer the fruitcake?
Oh, I'd be honoured.
Lovely. Oh, and if you'll forgive the reminder, no liqueur.
Alcohol, dear. Alcohol for the patients, verboten.
The women file out of their meeting room, Stella bringing up the rear. She pauses as a line of male patients accompanied by a warder passes in the corridor. She looks over her shoulder at them. She glances down a gloomy corridor at the group of women leaving, but does not follow them. She walks down an empty corridor, pausing to watch a shadowy figure crossing a dark corridor leading off to her right. She looks over her shoulder. A nurse is running past her down the corridor. Holding her handbag in a beige skirt and tight cream sweater, Stella pauses at the corner of another dark corridor. She turns down it. In the distance, two nurses restrain a patient. She walks up to a barrier of white bars and watches. A white-haired old woman pops up on the other side.
Are you joining us?
No, I'm not. No.
It's this way.
No.
But you're not allowed in the corridor. Come back! You're going the wrong way!
Peter kneels at Stella's feet to pick up his dropped papers and looks at her admiringly. A warder lets them out of a green door.
Thank you. I don't mean to nanny, but it might be wise to restrict yourself to the public areas of the hospital. One never quite knows what one might find.
Do the male and female patients ever mix?
Oh, yes, of course. At the annual hospital ball, a perfect opportunity to mingle. Believe me, once in years ample.
Can I give you a hand, Mrs. Bain?
No. Thank you, Mrs. Raphael.
Stella sits at the kitchen table smoking while her housekeeper washes up at the sink.
How did my predecessor fill her days?
She sewed. Tapestry. One year she did all the hospital, seen from above.
Stella sighs. She kneels by a rose bush in the garden. Charlie approaches.
Mummy, come and see.
What, darling?
Come and see.
Charlie takes his mother's hand. They run over to the glasshouse where a dark, handsome man is working.
Edgar, this is my mother. We've invented a test of strength. Will you time us?
I don't have my watch on, darling.
Just count.
Edgar lifts him on a spade handle.
Ready and lift. Go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Put him down. sorry I didn't see you there, Mrs. Raphael.
Come on, Charlie.
Edgar watches Stella leave. Max and Stella are at the dinner table.
Thank you, Mrs. Bain.
Stella drinks white wine from a crystal goblet. Max studies some papers, ignoring her.
Charlie's made a new friend, that man doing the glass house.
Oh, good.
Is he safe?
He wouldn't be in our garden if he wasn't. Working is a privilege, it can take years to earn it. They've all been fully vetted.
Is he one of yours?
No, Cleves. His favourite, I think.
Favourite?
It's not unusual to have a pet patient.
Who's yours?
You?
She looks down uncomfortably.
Why is Peter Cleve so taken with him?
Oh, you know him. Fancies himself an aesthete. And a fellow used to be a sculptor.
What did he do?
Heads, I think.
No, I meant...
I know what you meant. I interviewed him myself. Charlie is perfectly safe.
Edgar is on a stepladder in the glasshouse. Stella approaches, a pair of white-framed sunglasses on her head.
Hello. I'm sorry about the other day. I hope you didn't get into trouble.
No more than I'm in already, Mrs. Raphael.
She smiles and turns to leave. She turns back as Edgar throws a piece of glass onto the ground. He comes down the stepladder, taking off a glove. She walks around the outside of the glasshouse, looking down. Edgar walks over to face her through a broken window.
My husband tells me you are a sculptor.
I still am.
May I ask how long you've been here?
You may.
And?
6 years.
Peter Cleve is watching them from behind a bush.
I killed my wife. She betrayed me.
Nighttime. Peter is in his sitting room going through Edgar's file. He props up a photo of him on the table and lights a cigarette, studying the photo thoughtfully. Daytime. Edgar carries an unconscious Charlie into the house, blood on his forehead.
Mrs. Raphael!
The housekeeper looks angry.
What have you done to him?
Mrs. Raphael! He was climbing a tree. He fell.
Stella runs downstairs. Max and Stella bandage Charlie's head as he sits between them on the sofa, watched by Edgar. The housekeeper and a warden stand in the doorway.
Can Edgar stay for tea?
I'm afraid he can't.
I've got to get back to work, Charlie.
Edgar goes over to the doorway.
Thanks.
He nods and leaves with the warden. Stella is kneeling by a flowerbed in the garden. Edgar comes over and squats beside her.
How is he?
He's fine, thank you. I don't think he'll be climbing any trees just yet.
Oh, I don't know. Not my position, but I reckon he's an adventurer.
You might be right.
Suppose he gets that from you.
He helps her lift a watering can.
I doubt it.
Must be your husband, then.
They exchange looks. Nighttime. Max and Stella walk up to the hospital in evening dress.
Interesting dress.
Is that a compliment?
Yes. Might it be a touch too revealing, given the occasion?
I'll mention it to my dressmaker.
What a good idea.
Max and Stella enter the hall where the dance is in full swing. She is wearing a low-cut, tight black dress.
United Front.
Stella looks sullen. Doctors, nurses and patients crowd the dance floor. Max and Stella join in the dance, holding hands in a line. Jack and his wife Bridie laugh as they join in. The dancers stop and applaud. The dancing resumes. A male patient smothers his partner with kisses. A warder intervenes. Edgar dances with a nurse. Stella watches with a bored expression. Peter puts down a paper cup as he looks over at Stella. Stella, standing alone, looking miserable, claps. Max is in conversation with Jack. Edgar walks across the crowded dance floor, his tie loosened, towards Stella. He whispers in her ear. They start to dance, slowly, watched by Peter. Peter stands briefly on tiptoe, looking uncomfortable. He glances over at Max, who's still absorbed in conversation with Jack. As they dance, faces close together, Stella suddenly pulls back, embarrassed. Edgar looks at the floor bashfully. They start dancing again, cheek by cheek. Stella's eyes dart around the room, checking if anyone is watching. Max comes out of the bathroom, removing his dressing gown and tossing it onto a chair. Stella is on the bed in a short white nightdress. He joins her.
Can you keep a secret?
Depends what it is.
Jack told me he's planning to retire next year. I wonder who he's recommending as his successor.
Would it be someone I know?
It would.
Is it Peter Cleave?
Very droll.
Congratulations. That's wonderful news.
She kisses Max.
It'll be a huge commitment for both of us. I know it's not exactly ideal here for you and Charlie, but it'll change. We'll have that house and a garden. We'll be able to settle.
He takes her hand. Stella, in dark glasses, is on a sun lounger in the garden. Edgar approaches with a bunch of flowers.
Thank you for dancing with me.
She takes off her glasses to look at the flowers.
I can't take those.
He places them on the end of the sun lounger.
You could take what they mean.
He backs away, then turns, passing a patrolling warder.
Hello, Mr. Archer.
Edgar.
Stella is in her gloomy bedroom. She goes over to the window and looks down at Charlie and Edgar having a play sword fight in the garden with broom handles. A warder approaches them.
Break over!
Stella watches Edgar playfully lunge at Charlie a couple of times. She sits in front of her dressing table mirror, wearing a white, low-cut halter neck dress. Cigarette in hand, she drinks from a crystal tumbler. She puts down the glass and picks up a dark red lipstick, applying it deliberately to her mouth. She stares at herself in the mirror. She walks through the garden to the glasshouse, her dress revealing an expanse of bare back. Edgar, sawing in the glasshouse, looks up. She enters, walks up to him, and leans on a post, looking up at him expectantly. He grips her face with one hand, smearing her lipstick across her cheek with his thumb. Holding her face, he kisses her on the lips. He runs his hand down her body. He lifts her up, then lowers her onto the newly laid brick floor. He pushes up her skirt and rips her knickers, lying on top of her. She grips his shirt sleeve as he starts thrusting on top of her, pushing against the wall with her other hand.
Oh.
He tries to kiss her chest. She pushes him off and rolls over onto her knees, pulling her skirt across her thighs. He is on all fours, looking at her. She stands up, clamping a hand over her mouth. She walks out of the glasshouse. He stands up, adjusting his trousers, a crown emblem on the back of his shirt. She hurries across the garden, hand over her mouth, looking around nervously. A line of patients cross the drive. She jogs towards the front door of the house. Edgar and Stella lie in the glasshouse kissing. He pushes her sweater off her shoulder, revealing a white bra strap. She cycles out of the hospital gates as the barrier lifts, Charlie by her side. She turns and smiles at him. Wearing a pale blue dress, she approaches the glasshouse. Edgar is inside on a ladder. In their sitting room, Max and Stella sit opposite each other. He smokes. She grips a brandy glass and looks dreamy. They ignore each other. In the glasshouse, kneeling, Edgar grips Stella from behind as she hastily buttons up her dress. Edgar stands and pulls up his trousers as she leaves. He grabs a piece of sandpaper and rubs down a window frame as a warder approaches, checks on him, and leaves. Kneeling, Stella and Charlie release a goldfish from a bowl into the garden pond. Stella grips a window frame sitting in the glasshouse as Edgar buries his face in her crotch. At his desk, Peter writes notes as Edgar sits opposite him.
How are you finding Mrs. Raphael?
I don't have much to do with her. I'm busy with my work.
But Mr. Archer tells me of your recent interest in horticulture.
She's kind to me. I gave her some flowers a few weeks ago.
And you danced with her?
Only to show you I can behave myself with a woman.
I don't doubt it.
You're pleased with my progress.
I'm not here to judge you. But, yes, you're progressing as one would want.
And, in time, work duties lead to my release.
Have patience, Edgar. We still have many mountains to climb.
I've always done everything you've asked.
Indeed, but that does not make you ready for the world.
But you've cured me.
Of what, exactly?
Severe personality disorder with features of morbid jealousy.
Continue with your work and we'll continue to take a view.
Edgar leaves Peter's office and stomps off down the corridor to a recreation area where two patients are playing table tennis. Edgar slumps angrily into an armchair, impatiently tossing a ball at another patient. He clasps his hand to his head. Max is driving an elderly woman, Brenda, in the Jag.
Any news on the job?
You'll be the first to know.
Stella behaving herself?
Yes, Mother.
That fella's done wonders with your glasshouse.
Yes, it's scrubbed up rather well, hasn't it?
Well, our rockery resembles Berlin in 45. Perhaps you could pass him over to us.
I don't know if it's my imagination, but isn't he rather attractive?
It's your imagination.
He is attractive.
Did he do something rather nasty?
He murdered his wife.
Obviously, sir, and can't think where we got him.
What will happen to him?
I've no idea. That's Peter's department.
I suspect he'll be overhauling rockeries for a good few years to come.
Here's to locking the door and throwing away the key.
Stella drinks from her wine glass.
What the hell is wrong with you? You had no right to say that.
The way he casually dismissed that man's whole future, it was sickening.
Policy is not your concern.
I thought the policy was to reform.
It's none of your bloody business! Is it really so difficult to behave?
Like the other wives, like the other little ladies.
Frankly, yes.
She flinches as Max snatches her drink from her hand. Charlie gets into the jag with his grandmother. Edgar watches from the roof of the glasshouse. He turns round and looks down at a warder who is supervising two other patients in the garden below. Stella sits at her dressing table brushing her long hair. She puts down her hairbrush, stands up, and goes to the bedroom door. Edgar is running up the stairs. He strides towards her into the bedroom. Shutting the door behind him, she looks up at him, shaking her head. He pushes off the Alice band she wears on her hair and starts to kiss her. Still kissing, she strokes his cheek and backs towards the bed. Charlie smiles at his grandmother, Brenda, who's driving the jag.
Oh, no.
She makes a U-turn with the car. Edgar lies naked on top of Stella on the bed, kissing her. Hearing a noise, they jump up. Edgar pulls on his trousers. Stella opens the bedroom door to see Brenda jogging up the stairs.
I just had a bath.
Your point being?
Stella looks back in the bedroom and comes out. Edgar takes money from Max's jacket, putting it in his trouser pocket, then takes the jacket off its hanger.
I forgot my checkbook.
Oh. Where did you last see it?
Well, I don't know, do I?
Edgar creeps out of the bedroom and down the stairs, a finger to his lips as he passes Charlie. Stella looks down, horrified. Charlie comes upstairs as Edgar goes out of the front door. Brenda comes out of her room, giving Stella a dirty look.
Here it is. Here we go.
Charlie, confused, looks up at his mother as Brenda marches him downstairs. Two warders open the gates for the jag to pass. Right. Stella strides through the garden looking for Edgar. Passing some patients, she arrives at the empty glasshouse looking around. Charlie sits in the car, looking worried.
Are you all right? Have you seen a ghost?
He shakes his head.
What's the matter, darling?
There was a patient.
What patient? Where?
In the house. He might have been in Mummy's bedroom.
She brakes suddenly, causing a car behind to swerve.
Who was he? Do you know him?
Charlie shakes his head. The boot lid lifts. Edgar climbs out, crouching by Charlie's window, as Brenda gets out to shut the boot. Edgar shakes his head at Charlie. Brenda gets back in the car. Charlie looks nervous. Edgar hides in the undergrowth as the car pulls away. Stella sits at the kitchen table with a drink and a cigarette, looking nervous. A warder enters.
Can I use the phone, please?
Is everything all right?
Stella watches anxiously as the warder goes to the phone in the hall. She looks close to tears as she draws on her cigarette.
It's been suggested that your dealings with Edgar Stark went beyond propriety.
Suggested by who?
John Archer. And there have been whispers among the patients. These rumours soon get back to me. Naturally, I give them no credence, but I do need to know why they might have arisen.
Stella talked to Stark in the garden. She talks to many of the patients. What of it?
Stella?
Well, Charlie was fond of him, so of course I spoke to him occasionally.
You danced with him at the ball?
I danced with you, too.
Grim-faced, Max and Stella leave Jack's office and walk out of the building. Jack watches from a window. Peter and Bridie enter the office looking concerned.
I'm afraid it's true.
My God. Does Max know?
I suspect so. It's a bloody catastrophe. The Home Office will be apoplectic. End of my last year.
Doubtless they'll require a head to roll.
But they're not having mine. Did you never think the man might try to escape?
Of course not. Otherwise, I would have prevented it.
You're right about Max. He's not for us. Appalling, bloody, stupid woman. She practically chauffeured the man out of the door. As for the wife, never in 40 years. He obviously has no control over her. He'll be her next prey, for God's sake. You'll have to go.
May I suggest we don't toss that particular bone to the press? At least, not yet. We'll be crucified in the papers as it is. They love a madman on the loose. We must preserve the integrity of the hospital for the future.
Peter looks pointedly at Jack.
Peter, when the inspector arrives, do you think we can play down the more lurid aspects of Stark's recent activities?
Oh, naturally.
Do you think Stella helped him to escape?
Unwittingly. She was manipulated. I suspect she's fallen in love with him.
Peter is in Max's office.
You're fixated. That's why you passed him fit for work when you knew he was unstable.
Oh, drivel. Your wife destabilized him. One could hardly have predicted that element of the equation.
I assume you're acting as Jack's factotum sent to extract my resignation.
Spare us the grandiosity. Just get on with your work and keep quiet.
I might remind you that I'm your superior.
In what sense?
It's 7:45 on the hospital clock. Charlie is in the bath, motionless under the water, watched by Stella leaning on the side of the tub.
How long? You're supposed to time me.
I'm sorry, darling.
If they catch him, will he be in trouble?
She nods.
I don't think they will catch him. He's been gone too long. I think he's on a boat, sailing back to Australia.
Stella smiles. Wearing an overcoat, she leans on a tree, gazing at the unfinished glass house, looking melancholy. Peter approaches from behind. Startled, she turns to face him.
I think you should come and talk to me. Unofficially, of course.
He grabs her arm as she tries to leave.
Let me help you.
She pulls her arm free and marches off. Smoke billows from a nearby bonfire. She lies in the bath, gazing into the distance, the water reflecting light onto her face. She screws up her eyes, then pushes back her hair. Stella and Max sit at either end of the dining table, with Charlie in between.
I might go up to town tomorrow and do some early Christmas shopping.
Max nods.
Something for me?
Wait and see.
Stella dabs her mouth with a napkin, looking nervously at Max. Wearing a hat and a fur-trimmed coat, she sits in a first-class railway carriage, her face a mask. A double-decker bus passes a narrow, dingy street. Smoking, looking around anxiously, Stella sits in a cafe, watching the door, as a tall, handsome man enters. He walks away from her. As she stubs out her cigarette and puts on her gloves, a bearded man approaches and sits opposite her.
I'm Nick. It was me on the phone.
Why were you so late?
Had to be sure you weren't followed.
How do you know him?
I was his assistant. Before.
Nick drives Stella in a black van down a litter-strewn back street. They drive into a yard surrounded by tall, dark, derelict warehouses. She gets out of the van, clutching her shopping. As the van leaves, she goes through a corrugated iron gate and up a dark staircase. She slowly walks down a corridor, paint peeling from the walls. She looks nervous. She climbs another staircase, pausing outside a door. She pushes it open and enters a large, derelict room. Edgar, in a long coat, appears out of the shadows and slowly walks towards her.
Did you think I'd abandoned you?
She nods.
I couldn't contact you till it was safe.
She looks skeptical.
And it's safe now.
She steps towards him and they embrace, holding each other tight. They kiss passionately. Evening. Max is reading a file in the sitting room. Stella comes through the front door.
How was London?
Busy. I saw something for you, but they didn't have your size. I have to go and collect it next week.
Wearing a white bra and suspenders, Stella straddles Edgar in his studio. Kissing passionately, they tumble onto a bed. Wearing his coat over her underwear, Stella looks at Edgar's sketches on a table, then swigs whiskey from a bottle. He watches her from the bed in the corner of the room. At home, pulling her dressing gown closed over her nightdress, Stella comes out of the bathroom.
Successful trip. You found what you were after.
Yes, finally.
Where is it? Your shopping. The shopping you did in London, where is it?
It's for Christmas, I've hidden it.
Where?
What if I told you it wouldn't be hidden?
Show me what you bought. Show me, damn you!
She gets up from the dressing table, goes to a wardrobe and takes out a shoebox. Pulling off the lid, she throws it at him.
Happy Christmas.
Max looks in the box, then covers his eyes with his hand, looking contrite. He puts the box down next to him as he sits on the end of the bed. Stella brushes her hair vigorously at the dressing table.
Forgive me.
He kneels by her side and kisses her. He slides the dressing gown off her shoulder and the strap of her nightdress and kisses her again. He takes off his jacket and kisses her passionately on the neck and chest. Stella pulls on a skirt over a black basque in Edgar's scruffy studio. She watches Edgar approach, a blanket round his shoulders. She turns away, zipping up her skirt. She puts on lipstick as he watches her.
Does he suspect?
He's buried in his work.
Do you share a bed?
She turns away from the broken mirror to face him and walks towards him.
I'm yours.
He looks serious.
So don't go back to him. Come and live with me.
I can't just leave my family.
Yes, you can. Give them up or don't come back. Once you're here, we'll find a way to bring Charlie too. Please. I can't share you.
He leans forward and kisses her tenderly.
Decide.
Lost in thought, she sits by the glass house smoking. Peter approaches in a hat and overcoat.
How's Edgar?
What on earth do you mean?
Your housekeeper let slip you're taking regular trips to London. You're seeing him, aren't you?
If you knew women, you'd know they like to shop occasionally.
He sits next to her on the bench.
Don't delude yourself you're in love with a tortured genius. He's a failed artist, infinitely more dangerous, both to you and himself. He's mine, and he needs my help.
Evidently, he disagrees.
She draws on her cigarette.
You should know what he did to his wife.
I don't need to know. I have nothing to do with the man.
He beat her to death with a hammer and then decapitated her. He took a scalpel and cut out her eyes, and then he hacked at her face as if it were clay. Perhaps there won't be any more trips to London. Perhaps your mental state is too fragile. With Max's consent, we can hold you here.
Nonsense.
Oh, but we can.
She looks uneasy.
For your own safety, of course. Stella, tell me where he is.
Stella is in her bedroom, hurriedly packing a suitcase. She puts a note on the dressing table, then places one on the teddy bear on Charlie's bed. She pulls his pajamas from under the pillow and holds them to her nose. Wearing a headscarf, she creeps downstairs with a suitcase.
Mrs. B, how do you spell amoeba?
With a dictionary, my dear. Don't ask me. I've got the brain of an amoeba.
She looks down the corridor at Charlie in the kitchen, then leaves. It's dark. Nick opens the studio door to Stella. Edgar steps forward and opens the door wide. He smiles, pulling her in and embracing her. She looks shell-shocked. He holds her head and kisses her all over her face, then hugs her. Max sits on Charlie's bed.
She's...
He takes off his glasses.
She's having a little holiday. I'm sure she'll be back very soon.
Charlie nods, then looks down. Max avoids looking at his son.
Shall I read to you?
Charlie nods. Max puts on his glasses and reaches for a book.
Has she gone to Australia?
Max looks taken aback. Charlie, clutching the note, lies down.
That was Tom's great secret. The scheme to return home with his brother pirates and attend their own funerals. They had paddled over to the Missouri shore on a log at dusk on Saturday.
Stella and Edgar jive drunkenly in the studio. Stella swigs from a bottle, then passes it to Edgar. In the background, Nick sways to the music as Stella and Edgar kiss. Edgar draws a charcoal sketch of Stella. She's lying on a mattress on the floor.
I've got pins and needles.
She's eating lots of things. She's a black Caribbean. Have you had a black woman?
No, you haven't. I have.
I was very drunk, but, you know. I'm quite good with family, but it took me a lot of things.
Stella leans against a wall in the studio, posing for Edgar. He gestures her to undress. He feverishly slaps clay on a bust. She touches his back. He pushes her away.
I'm working.
She looks bored and disgruntled.
I'm going for a walk, all right?
Be careful.
Wearing a green headscarf pulled forward and holding her overcoat closed at the throat, she wanders through a busy street market. She's startled by young boys playing cowboys with toy guns rushing past her. She wanders along looking at the stalls, pausing at a display of toy guns. She points to a toy in a box and reaches into her bag for money to pay the stallholder, taking the box from him.
Thank you.
She notices Nick looking over at her from another stall and goes up to him.
Are you following me?
No.
What, you just like hanging around in markets?
She pushes past him and storms back to the studio where Edgar is sculpting.
Have you any reason not to trust me? So why have me followed?
It won't happen again, sorry.
Why don't you trust me?
I said I'm sorry.
She turns away angrily. Nick returns looking uncomfortable.
I'm working.
You're always working. It's just like being with my husband.
Is it?
Yes.
Like being with your husband, is it?
Yes.
Just like home?
Yes.
Is this what it was like?
He pushes her against the wall.
Yes.
Like this.
Nick looks away as Edgar roughly shoves his hand between Stella's legs. Smiling, Stella carries a flaming Christmas pudding to the table. Edgar and Nick wear homemade paper hats. Edgar embraces Stella, who looks wistful.
The pain is
Tell me. Feeling. I miss Charlie. Oh,
it's all right. The floor is as cold as it can be.
They dance slowly in the shabby studio, watched by Nick, who lies on the bare wooden floor, clutching a bottle.
I'm going crazy in my lonely room. I'm going to the doctor.
Stella scrapes turkey bones from a tin dish into a saucepan. Nick approaches, rubbing his neck awkwardly, and stands with his back to her.
I love you. Doesn't matter, but I do.
No, you don't.
I do.
Edgar stirs on a couch.
I love him too. Happy Christmas, Stella.
They kiss each other chastely. Edgar lunges at Nick, punching him and pulling his head back violently.
You touch her again, I'll fucking kill you.
A man in a trilby wanders through the street market, showing a photo of Stella to stall holders. In the studio, looking unhappy, Stella wanders over to Nick, who's packing.
Please stay, Nick.
I'm going to clear out my stuff before he gets back. There's no point in arguing.
He zips up a hold-all.
It's not my place, but maybe you should come with me.
She looks miserable.
He's turning. I've seen it before.
With his wife?
I saw the body. Please don't stay here.
She looks at Nick, close to tears. Stella paces the dark studio anxiously. She goes towards the door purposefully.
I thought you'd been caught.
Is that what you want?
No, of course not.
Are you missing your comforts?
No.
You were going to Nick.
He stands close to her menacingly.
Are you going to start hitting me now?
Sobbing, he punches himself violently on the head, then turns away from her. She moves towards him, reaching out to touch his shoulder. He leans his head on a window frame and shuts his eyes. She gazes at him intently, looking sympathetic. They kiss gently. She poses as Edgar sculpts a tiny bust of her using a scalpel. She stands up as he focuses on fashioning the clay. He steals a look at her with a dark expression. Looking bedraggled, she wanders through the market, clutching a couple of paper bags. She turns to see Nick sitting at a window table in a cafe. She goes in and sits opposite him.
He needs help. Can you find a doctor?
I'll see what I can do.
Edgar, a cap pulled low over his face, walks through the market, one hand in his pocket. He stops outside the cafe and watches Nick holding Stella's hand as she sobs. She arrives back at the studio. Edgar is crouching behind a wall. He springs out, grabs her arm and punches her twice in the face. He straddles her as she lies on the floor, looking down at her contemptuously.
I saw you together. You're fucking...
She shakes her head. He punches her in the face and stands up. Holding her face, she rolls onto her side. She looks up as he stands over her, sharpening a carving knife. He puts down the steel and bends down to pick up an apple from the floor. He starts to peel it with a large knife, sitting on the edge of the table. He puts down the apple, gets off the table, and kneels over her, pulling her hand away from her mouth, pushing a piece of apple between her lips.
When my wife took her lovers, she tried to poison me.
He watches her eat the apple and picks up the remaining part and pushes it into his mouth with splayed fingers. Stella lies in the bath in the studio, expressionless, gazing at the ceiling. Smoking, she walks across the yard towards the studio. As she climbs the wooden stairs, she notices the policeman from the market standing above her in the doorway. She turns and runs downstairs. The policeman hears her footsteps and runs after her. He grabs her as she reaches the door to the yard.
Mrs. Raphael.
A black police car arrives in the yard. The policeman escorts Stella out of the door. Spitting, Edgar arrives back at the yard. He hesitates as he sees the police car, hiding behind a corner. He watches Stella being ushered into the police car. She notices him, and he dodges behind the corner. She gets in the car. A policeman escorts Max to a cell, holding open the door. He enters. Stella is curled up in a corner. She looks up.
You'll be released in the morning.
Stern-faced, he turns to leave.
Could I see Charlie?
She's pale, with a cut lip.
You're aware I could prevent you from having any further contact with him. But he needs you.
She looks down.
You'll see him tomorrow.
She looks up at Max. Disgusted, he leaves the cell. The policeman locks the door behind him. She bows her head. Press photographers snap Max and Stella as they leave the police station and get into the white Jag.
Mr. Raphael, do you have any comments?
Carrying his hat, Peter Cleave wanders through the studio. He pauses by the sofa and picks up a white slip draped over the arm. He drops it and, taking a handkerchief from his trouser pocket, picks up some charcoal sketches from the table. He pauses and looks down at the tiny clay bust of Stella's head. He picks it up and looks at it closely. Max is driving Stella.
There's a blanket in the back if you want to sleep. It's a long journey.
Where are we going?
Wales.
What?
Wales. North Wales. Sheep, tractors, and a genetic hatred of the English. Once it got in the papers, I was dismissed. I managed to get a position at a local hospital.
Jack fired you?
No. His successor.
Peter, hands behind his back, struts around Jack's office, looking around. He reaches into his jacket pocket and takes out his handkerchief, sitting down at the desk. He carefully unwraps the clay figurine of Stella and studies it. He strokes it with his index finger. It's dark. The Jag pulls up outside a house, its headlamps shining on the plain wood front door. Turning off the lights, Max gets out and goes to the boot, ignoring Stella, who climbs out of the back seat. Brenda opens the front door. Stella wanders through the small house. She hesitates outside a dark wood door, then slowly opens it. It's Charlie's bedroom. He's tucked up in bed with a light on. She goes in and sits on the edge of the bed. She pulls the cover off him to reveal his face.
Are you asleep?
He looks up at her, blinking.
Are you better now?
She nods.
Very, very sorry.
He goes back to sleep. She strokes his hair. She goes into the master bedroom.
Thank you for letting me see him.
A stronger man would have let you rot.
You're strong.
Don't be trite. I wasn't strong enough to keep you.
Max leans down, picks up a pillow and blanket, and leaves.
Good night.
Good night.
She stands in the cottage doorway, arms folded, watching a tractor pass. A dark red car pulls up. Brenda walks out of the cottage, pushing past Stella in the doorway.
A little word of advice. Don't let your shame degenerate into self-pity. It seldom helps.
Stella walks past a ruined house. A man walks towards her, a gun over his shoulder and a collie at his feet.
Settled in, all right? Walking, are you?
She walks past him, ignoring him. She stands by the Jag outside the school playground.
Charlie!
She gives her son a hug. He looks embarrassed. Charlie breaks free and joins the other children going into school. She walks back to the car and gets in. In her dressing gown, her hair hanging loose, she pours whiskey into a tumbler and takes a drink. Max walks into the kitchen and finds her slumped at the table with a scotch bottle nearby.
We can't live like this. Please come back to us.
She bows her head.
Please.
She looks up at him, standing in the doorway. A staff party at the old hospital. A woman with glasses leaves the party to answer the phone.
Hello? Oh, speak up, will you? This line's atrocious. Yes. Yes. Yes, Wales. Well, I don't have an address, only the hospital, Cledwyn General. Cledwyn. Oh, well, I've no idea. Ask a policeman. An old colleague of Dr. Raphael's. He's a mumbler. Please.
Peter takes the phone.
Who is this? Hello? Edgar?
A police car is parked outside the Welsh Hospital. Max is on the phone.
You're expecting the police?
Yes, they're here already. If he comes for her.
I wouldn't like to say what he'll do. Put her on medication, as you.
She doesn't need it. She's fine.
Stella stands by the car outside the school.
Yeah, goodbye. Bye, Jan. Bye, David. Goodbye. Bye, Owen. Bye, Charlie.
Bye, Mr. Wilkins.
See you tomorrow.
The teacher watches Charlie leave. Stella opens the car door for him, smiling.
There's a school field trip next week.
Are parents allowed to come?
Charlie shakes his head. They arrive back at the cottage. The kitchen table is laden with plates of cakes and sandwiches. Charlie sits down.
If you need me, I'll be upstairs. I've just got to finish something.
He nods, looking around at the piles of food. He opens the bedroom door. Stella, still in her overcoat, is energetically painting the wall lilac. He watches her. She turns and smiles at Charlie, offering him a brush. He takes it, still in his school uniform, and walks over to the paint tin. He dips the brush in, painting the wall with small strokes. He glances across at his mother a couple of times, uncertainly.
Parents are allowed on the field trip. I told a lie.
Stella looks away.
Well, everyone lies occasionally. Good for telling me.
Charlie starts painting again.
Would you like some company?
He nods.
Well, I don't think I'm busy next week.
They embrace. Nighttime. Edgar, unshaven, is lurking in the shadows in the Welsh Hospital car park, watching the entrance. He turns and leaves, running away from the car park. Max and Stella are in bed.
I know you long for him. But you won't see him again, you know that, don't you?
Yes.
We'll be a family again, like before. In time, this will be what you want.
He turns and looks at her. Edgar is smashing the glass of an office door in the hospital. He lets himself in. He goes over to a desk and puts on a lamp, shining it on the staff list on the wall, studying the names and phone numbers. In the kitchen, Stella is buttoning her coat with Charlie.
Hurry, darling, we mustn't keep Daddy waiting.
Charlie puts on his coat as Stella answers the phone.
Hello?
Charlie goes out to the car, buttoning his coat. He gets into the back seat.
Where's Mummy?
Phone rang.
Stella hurries out to the car.
Sorry.
Who was it?
Mr. Griffin. Instructions for our field trip.
Stella drops off Max at the hospital. As she drives away, he talks to a policeman at the entrance.
Inspector.
Morning, Dr. Raphael. It's going to be a help out.
She drives into a field and parks. She gets out near a ruined mansion. Looking over her shoulder, she walks towards the derelict property. She starts to run. She enters the ruin through a hole in the wall. The wind whips her hair as she walks slowly through the eerie, crumbling building. Edgar grabs her by the throat.
Okay.
He kisses her. They embrace. He strokes her cheek.
I can't leave Charlie again. I promised him. I'll never stop loving you.
Where is he?
At school.
We'll go and get him. Take him with us.
They're startled by a policeman outside the ruin. Edgar looks at Stella accusingly, then runs. A policeman chases him. He throws him to the ground and sprints off. A large group of uniformed policemen surround Edgar. Stella runs after them. Edgar is hurled to the ground and punched and kicked. Stella is held by two policemen as Edgar, lying face down on the ground, is handcuffed. The detective looks down at him. Edgar is pulled to his feet. He struggles. Stella, distraught, tries to break free from the policeman. Edgar is dragged away. Max is outside the cottage with a policeman who gets in his car and leaves. Stella watches from the kitchen window. She paces across the room. Max storms in. She backs away from him. He leans over her, close to her face.
He's gone.
Now let him go!
She flinches. He strides off.
Six green bottles hanging on the wall. Six green bottles hanging on the wall. And if one green bottle should accidentally fall...
Stella sits next to Charlie on the school bus, staring out of the window. The coach crosses remote moorland. The school party get out of the coach.
If I can have your attention, please. Children, don't forget to collect items of interest in your jam jars. Now, if you could form yourselves into groups, please, at least one adult in each. There we go. Okay, one, two, there we go. Thanks, Mrs. Jones. Here we are. Well done, Charlie.
Charlie and Stella trail after the others. They walk by a river on a steep bank.
I'm going to catch a fish.
Won't you need a rod?
I'm hoping a small one will swim into my jar. Do you know, fish can only remember things for 8 seconds.
Charlie runs on ahead on the riverbank, clambering over large rocks, carrying his jam jar. Stella sits on a rock, looking distracted. Charlie, in Wellingtons and a woolly hat, tiptoes down to the water. Stella lights a cigarette. Charlie looks back at her. She smiles weakly. Charlie bends to scoop water into his jar. Stella watches, looking detached. Charlie pours some water out of the jar and bends to scoop up more. He looks at the jar, disappointed. Stella seems lost in thought. Charlie nearly overbalances in the shallows. She watches him fall into the river, arms flailing. He disappears under the water. She is unmoved. Charlie bobs up out of the water. Stella blinks. The teacher appears higher up on the bank and sees Charlie struggling in the water.
Mrs. Raphael! Mrs. Raphael, do something!
Stella doesn't move.
Do something!
Fully clothed, the teacher wades into the river and swims out to Charlie. He dives under the water, watched by Stella impassively. Charlie's hat floats on the water. She doesn't react. The teacher drags Charlie up from under the water. Stella suddenly springs up and scrambles down the steep bank. The teacher carries Charlie in his arms. Stella rushes into the water towards them and helps carry Charlie over to the bank. A funeral in a cemetery on a sunny day. Stella watches from the back of a chauffeur-driven black car. The mourners walk through the graves, led by Max and his mother, Brenda. Jack and his wife Bridie are amongst the line of mourners slowly moving along the path through the cemetery. As the path narrows, Max lets his mother go first. Peter overtakes some of the guests to catch up with Jack and Bridie.
Excuse me. Jack? You must come and visit me soon. Maybe next summer.
So kind of you to deal with all this, Max.
Oh, the least I could do. Max is in complete agreement. Of course, I had to arrange things with the Home Office. It's a little bit sticky, but we got there.
Well, arranging things is your forte, isn't it, Peter?
Goodbye, my dear.
As the vicar and guests file past Max and Brenda, Peter approaches them.
Well, shall I keep you informed?
I don't want to know.
Oh, my dear.
Peter kisses Brenda. Jack and Bridie approach Max.
So sorry. Dear Max.
Max and Jack embrace. Max frees himself from Jack and walks purposefully to Stella's car, opening the door angrily.
I want you to understand what's going to happen next. The shock will wear off, and it will be replaced by a devastating grief. In time, you'll come to terms with what you've done, and you'll just be very, very sad. And that sadness will stay with you for the rest of your life.
Peter, in the car, leans across Stella and shuts the door. It's dark and raining hard. The green gates of the hospital open to allow the black car through. The lights are on in the large hospital. Stella walks down a corridor, flanked by Peter and a nurse. He takes her arm and guides her towards the bars that cut off the patient's wing. A nurse washes Stella in the shower, pushing her against the tiled wall and roughly scrubbing her back with a long-handled brush. In a loose-fitting gown, Stella is escorted by a nurse into a room where Peter waits. She sits on the bed. He places pills and a glass of water in her hands. She takes the pills with a drink. He takes the water off her and gives it to the nurse.
Where's Charlie? Where's my picture of Charlie?
With your belongings.
I mean, I can't see him.
Not yet.
Because I killed him, didn't I?
Peter puts an arm around her shoulders.
Come.
She lies on the bed. Peter is handed a syringe by the nurse. He lifts her gown and plunges the needle into her thigh. He pulls out the syringe and places the covers over her. She rubs her eyes. He puts her arm under the blanket and straightens the covers, tucking them in. He leans over.
Is it okay?
Of course not.
Where is he?
The past, Stella. He's in the past.
Daytime. Peter hurries downstairs, smiling and nodding at a warder who unlocks a door for him. He enters Edgar's room.
Good afternoon.
Edgar, standing, ignores Peter.
If you won't speak, I can't treat you. Do you want to stay in solitary forever?
Peter steps close to Edgar.
Talk. Say something!
Edgar flinches.
Express your contempt.
Peter stands by Edgar's side and turns slowly to look at him.
She's here. She's been here 6 weeks. She's my patient.
Peter walks around Edgar.
Why?
Edgar ignores him.
Something terrible. The boy drowned. Yes, you were fond of him.
Peter moves closer to Edgar.
Would you like to see her?
He is inches from his ear.
Speak.
Edgar doesn't react. Peter leaves suddenly. Peter strides down the corridor looking purposeful. He hurries up a flight of stairs. A warder opens a barred door for him. He sits opposite Stella.
Did you do as I asked? To think rigorously about what it means to love?
I'm beginning to understand that it was never real, that it was all an obsession.
Can you define your feelings for him?
She looks down.
I have none. It's over. It ended when Charlie died.
If I told you he was here in the hospital...
She looks up.
Well, I suppose it would be logical if he were.
She looks searchingly at Peter.
The question was hypothetical.
She nods and looks down. Peter closes his notebook and switches off a tape recorder. He removes his glasses and tosses them down.
You've been very brave these past weeks.
Thank you, Peter.
She smiles as he clasps her hand. He gets up and helps her out of her chair. She leaves his office. He watches her, tapping his fingers on the back of the chair. Peter arrives at Max's rundown cottage in Wales. Parked in front, the Jag, dirty, with a wheel missing. In a smart suit, Peter walks across a field with Max, who is smoking and looks unkempt.
Oh, I see you've got a flat tire.
I don't need a car.
Not for work?
I've resigned. I think I might go into teaching. I might be quite good with children.
Yes. Good idea.
What do you want from me?
Peter turns to face Max.
Come. Ah, welcome. Thank you, nurse.
Stella enters Peter's office.
Would you like a drink? I usually have one about that.
I'd love one.
He gestures for her to sit down.
The usual. Your own usual, should I say.
She looks around uncertainly, nodding as she sits. They clink glasses.
Yesterday I went to see Max. I made a suggestion with which he concurred. My contacts at the Home Office might well release you from here were I to guarantee your continued treatment and safety. What I mean to say is that were you to live with me in my house, these conditions would most likely be satisfied.
He sits opposite her.
I can offer you a fine home and a decent life. Travelling, art, gardening, and so on.
But I'm still married to Max.
He wants to divorce you.
He drains his glass.
No.
She puts down her drink.
You're a very dark horse.
Well, I assure you, this is not my usual procedure with patients. It's something that rather crept up on me. It would be arrogant to suggest that you might love me. But I believe you need me at present, and perhaps in time this need might grow into love of some variety.
She looks down uncomfortably.
Are you a passionate man, Peter?
I think that's something we'd have to discover.
Edgar to Peter.
What would she want with an old queen like you?
Ah, we have dialogue.
I'm disappointed. I thought you wanted me.
You resent it, don't you? That you might find happiness with someone else.
Peter and Stella are on top of the clock tower, looking down at the patients below in the yard.
I wondered if you might like this.
He offers her a ring.
Oh, Peter. Thank you, it's beautiful.
It was my mother's.
He slides it on her finger. She leans forward and gently kisses his cheek. He smiles bashfully.
Shall we?
He ushers her towards the door at the top of the stairs.
Here.
He looks pleased with himself.
The ladies were discussing the hospital ball.
Would you like to attend?
They stand at the bottom of the stairs in the clock tower.
I'm not sure.
Well, it might be difficult for you. Memories and so on.
She looks up at him.
You'll be there.
Well, of course, yes, that's true.
She walks towards the back of the large clock face.
Will Edgar be there?
Peter blinks, lost for words.
If we're to be married, Peter, let's not have lies.
Peter nods, then smiles sympathetically.
You knew he was here?
I heard talk, and I know you. You wouldn't give up on a patient.
I thought it might be traumatic for you. I would have told you in time.
She nods.
Forgive me.
Of course.
He gives her a chaste peck on the cheek, walks behind her, and leans on the banister.
To answer your question, he'll be at the dance. Unless you wish otherwise.
Whatever you think is best.
He goes down the wooden staircase, then looks up at her.
Might be useful for his recovery to see you moved on, as it were.
She nods.
You fail her. He did. I did. So will you.
Perspective. We can work with that.
Cleave.
Edgar puts his hand on Peter's shoulder.
Will you let me see her? Please.
Peter pouts, his face close to Edgar's.
The hospital ball might be an opportunity. Cooperate in your treatment. And we'll see.
Their faces are inches apart. The hospital ball. Guests mill around the buffet tables. Stella arrives in a revealing tight black dress, looking serene. She watches a group of male patients walk into the hall. She sits down, eyes glued on the door. She cranes her neck to look for Edgar. Peter approaches her in a dinner jacket.
You look magnificent.
She looks down, bashfully. He helps her to her feet.
You look very dashing yourself.
I remember that dress.
I'm amazed it still fits.
Peter looks at the dance floor.
Will you dance with me later?
That would be lovely.
He leaves her, his face hardening as his smile fades. She sits. Dressed in a suit, Edgar is leaning on the door of his room. A warden unlocks it. Grim-faced, Peter watches Stella across the dance hall. Peter strides purposefully down a corridor past a group of male patients in suits. Edgar is at the back by a warder. He smiles as he spots Peter.
Ah.
Peter beams at Edgar, who straightens his jacket. Peter indicates that the warder should leave. Stella stands in the dance hall looking around. With a sad expression, she watches the patients and staff glide around on the dance floor. She looks over at the door. Edgar has arrived. She walks towards him with a dreamy expression. He makes his way through the dancers. Suddenly, Peter appears, beaming in front of her.
Stella.
He dances with her. She looks shell-shocked.
Oh, by the way, I went to fetch Edgar, and he was asleep. I woke him and he said that he'd changed his mind and didn't want to come.
She swallows hard and continues dancing with an expression of abject misery. Edgar crouches in his dark room, sobbing. Nurses escort a line of female patients back to their wing. Stella walks down the corridor in the line of patients as if in a daze. She looks over her shoulder and continues walking, looking shifty. Stella suddenly leaves the line of women, turning down an adjoining corridor alone. She pulls the ring off her finger and throws it to the ground as she walks along. She breathes deeply, her face a mask. She turns and climbs up the staircase in the dark clock tower. The moon casts diagonal shadows on the walls as she climbs up to the roof. She looks upwards, her neck outstretched as she passes the back of the large clock face. She opens the door leading onto the roof. It's very dark. She climbs up onto the side and jumps. She lands on a glass roof below. A crowd gathers around her body. Peter pushes his way through. He kneels over her, stroking her hair, holding her hand. She lies amongst the shards of glass covered in blood.
Leave me alone.
Her head moves slightly as she breathes her last. Peter removes his hand from her head and straightens up, looking shocked. Swallowing hard. In the recreation area, surrounded by patients playing cards and ping pong, Edgar sits staring ahead, expressionless. Max stands by a grave in a sunny cemetery, holding a bunch of flowers in his hands, which are clasped in front of him. He steps forward and, squatting, places the flowers on Charlie's grave. He looks over at a newly filled grave next to Charlie's and takes a flower from the bunch. He stands, walks behind Charlie's headstone, and places the flower, a purple iris, in front of the simple wooden cross on Stella's grave on the bare earth. He squats between the two graves, looking at each of them. Peter is writing at his desk. He puts down his pen and picks up a blotter, blots the paper and closes the file, putting it to one side. He leans forward and looks at the figurine in the palm of his hand. He places it on his desk, slowly removing his hand. He taps his fingers on the desk, then leans back in his chair, clasping his hands, looking at the figurine of Stella. The end.
Secret love, class envy, underage sex, it's a heady brew in another psycho thriller adapted by Patrick Marber. Judi Dench is the veteran school teacher obsessed with new colleague Kate Blanchett, who in turn has fallen for one of her pupils. Notes on a Scandal, now showing on Sky Box Office. Thank you.